6. The Age of Mammals. First, a new age of life. Second, tradition comes into the world. Third, an age of brain growth. Fourth, the world grows hard again. First, the third great division of the geological record, the Cainozoic, opens with a world already physically very like the world we live in today. Probably the day was at first still perceptibly shorter, but the scenery had become very modern in its character. Climate was, of course, undergoing age by age its incessant and irregular variations. Lands that are temperate today have passed, since the Cainozoic age began, through phases of great warmth, intense cold, and extreme dryness. But the landscape, if it altered, altered to nothing that can't be paralleled today in some part of the world or other. In the place of the cycads, sequoias, and strange conifers of the Mesozoic, the plant names that now appear in the list of fossils include birch, beech, and holly, tulip trees, ivy, sweet gum, breadfruit trees. Flowers had developed concurrently with bees and butterflies. Palms were now very important. Such plants had already been in evidence in the later levels of the American Cretaceous Mesozoic, but now they dominated the scene altogether. Grass was becoming a great fact in the world. Certain grasses, too, had appeared in the later Mesozoic, but only with the Cainozoic period came grass plains and turf spreading wide over a world that was once barren stone. The period opened with a long phase of considerable warmth. Then the world cooled, and in the opening of this third part of the record, this Cainozoic period, a gigantic crumpling of the earth's crust and an upheaval of mountain ranges was in progress. The Alps, the Andes, the Himalayas are all Cainozoic mountain ranges. The background of an early Cainozoic scene, to be typical, should display an active volcano or so. It must have been an age of great earthquakes. Geologists make certain main divisions of the Cainozoic period, and it'll be convenient to name them here and to indicate their climate. First comes the Eocene, dawn of recent life, an age of exceptional warmth in the world's history, subdivided into an older and newer Eocene. Then the Oligocene, but little of recent life, of which the climate was still equable. The Miocene, with living species still in a minority, was the great age of mountain building, and the general temperature was falling. In the Pliocene, more living than extinct species, climate was very much at its present phase, but with the Pleistocene, a great majority of living species, there set in a long period of extreme conditions. It was the Great Ice Age. Glaciers spread from the poles towards the equator until England to the Thames was covered in ice. Thereafter, to our own time, came a period of partial recovery. We may be moving now towards a warmer phase. Half a million years hence, this may be a much sunnier and pleasanter world to live in than it is today. Second, in the forests and following the grass over the Eocene plains, there appeared for the first time a variety and abundance of mammals. Before we proceed to any description of these mammals, it may be well to note in general terms what a mammal is. From the appearance of the vertebrated animals in the lower Paleozoic age, when the fish first swarmed out into the sea, there's been a steady progressive development of vertebrated creatures. A fish is a vertebrated animal that breathes by gills and can live only in water. An amphibian may be described as a fish that has added to its gill breathing the power of breathing air with its swimming bladder in adult life. And that's also developed. Limbs with five toes to them in place of the fins of a fish. A tadpole is, for a time, a fish. It becomes a land creature as it develops. A reptile is a further stage in this detachment from water. It's an amphibian that's no longer amphibious. It passes through its tadpole stage, its fish stage, that is, in an egg. From the beginning, it must breathe in air. It can never breathe underwater, as a tadpole can do. Now, a modern mammal is really a sort of reptile that has developed a peculiarly effective protective covering, hair, and that also retains its eggs in the body until they hatch, so that it brings forth living young, viviparous. And even after birth, it cares for them and feeds them by its mammae for a long or shorter period. Some reptiles, some vipers, for example, are viviparous, but none stand by their young as the real mammals do. Both the birds and the mammals, which escaped whatever destructive forces made an end to the Mesozoic reptiles, and which survived to dominate the Cainozoic world, have these two things in common. First, a far more effective protection against changes of temperature than any other variation of the reptile type ever produced. And secondly, a peculiar care for their eggs, the bird by incubation and the mammal by retention, and a disposition to look after the young for a certain period after hatching or birth. There is, by comparison, the greatest carelessness about offspring in the reptile. Hair was evidently the earliest distinction of the mammals from the rest of the reptiles. It's doubtful if the particular theriodont reptiles who were developing hair in the early Mesozoic were viviparous. Two mammals survive to this day which not only don't suckle their young, but which lay eggs, the Ornithorhynchus and the Echidna. And in the Eocene, there were a number of allied forms. They are the survivors of what was probably a much larger number and variety of small, egg-laying, hairy creatures, hairy reptiles, hoppers, climbers, and runners, which included the Mesozoic ancestors of all existing mammals, up to and including man. Now, we may put the essential facts about mammalian reproduction in another way. The mammal is a family animal, and the family habit involved the possibility of a new sort of continuity of experience in the world. Compare the completely closed-in life of an individual lizard with the life of even a quite lowly mammal of almost any kind. The former has no mental continuity with anything beyond itself. It's a little self-contained globe of experience that serves its purpose and ends. But the latter picks up from its mother and hands on to its offspring. All the mammals, except for the two genera we've named, had already, before the Lower Eocene Age, arrived at this stage of pre-adult dependence and imitation. They were all more or less imitative in youth and capable of a certain modicum of education. They all, as a part of their development, received a certain amount of care and example and even direction from their mother. This is as true of the hyena and rhinoceros as it is of the dog or man. The difference or educability is enormous, but the fact of protection and educability in the young stage is undeniable. As far as the vertebrated animals go, these new mammals with their viviparous, young protecting disposition, and these new birds with their incubating, young protecting disposition, introduce at the opening of the Cainozoic period a fresh thing into the expanding story of life, namely social association, the addition to hard and inflexible instinct of tradition, and the nervous organization necessary to receive tradition.